Well, good evening, everybody. Do not adjust your monitor. It's something very bad going down tonight. It's Barracuda After Dark with yours truly, Ian Reed, and my good friend, Zach Devine.
Hello, hello.
How's everyone doing tonight?
Going.
And by everyone, I mean, I guess, just me and you, right?
Oh, all wait. Right. There we go. Sorry, had a microphone malfunction. We're back.
That's okay. This is the kind of quality that you can count on from Barracuda After Dark. Oh man, what a game. That was a fun game for sure. I enjoyed it. But I mean it was a lot more dicey than I expected it to be.
Yeah, you know, and I tweeted this during the game. The Heat really did a nice job of shutting down the transition game for the Barracuda. You know, that's really been their bread and butter and what's really helped them dominate, you know, throughout the season. And we've seen that ability to just not play much defense. And the Heat did a really good job. Credit to them to really hem the Barracuda in their own zone for long stretches.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I thought that, I thought the Heat did a good job of trying to shut down the Barracuda's transition game. And the one thing with the Barracuda that's really concerning to me is just the amount of opportunities they're giving other teams on the penalty kill. I understand that their penalty kill's one of the best in the league, but I just, man, you're playing with fire.
Yeah, you know, and it's got to be something, it's becoming kind of a hallmark of their game, right? Yeah. It's dominate, get out to a lead, and then take a lot of penalties. And the penalty kill's been good, and without that, this streak would not be intact because the penalties they're taking, they're exorbitant. They really are.
Yeah, I mean, they're taking 5+ a night, it feels like, lately.
Yeah, I'd have to go back. But, yeah, it's feeling like that. And the power plays bailed them out, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, two goals again tonight. Nikita Jeflov has continued his really impressive sophomore campaign. Ian, I know you're a big fan, and we've talked about it, but he's just really becoming a jack of all trades for the CUDA.
Yeah, I really like, I mean, he's a guy who I was really down on last year after being kind of excited about him because I was like, oh, 100 points, but I forgot to be like in the queue. And so I was kind of disappointed when he came over last year, you know, but last year's team had its issues too. I mean, it wasn't really built to let skill guys be skill guys, I don't think. So, I mean, that was obviously part of the problem, but yeah, I mean the improvement that he's shown since last year, I mean, it's been huge. He's a guy who I was like, well, you know, last year I was kind of like, well, you know, not drafted, you know, free agent signing, meh, you win some, you lose some. But now that, you know, a lot of these signings that Doug Wilson has done from, you know, from Europe and from these undrafted guys, I mean, he's really hit money on a lot of them.
Yeah, and another UDFA that was signed, Jacob Middleton. You know, he returned after a couple games. He's been a really impressive kind of defensive stalwart. Doesn't bring a lot offensively.
Right.
But adds some meat back there on the blue line. You know, he's a player that could develop into a, I would say, like a Brendan Dillon, you know, is kind of his ceiling. But you look at the tools he's got, you know, there's definitely some pieces there to work with over the next couple years with the Barracuda and Roy Sommer.
Yeah, no, I agree. Middleton, I mean, really has gone, I mean, other than you, he's really kind of gone unheralded. As far as everything goes, I mean, there's so many, it's hard too, because there's so many good stories with this team.
Right.
And obviously, you know, yeah, obviously like Middleton's done really well, but then when you have guys like, you know, Joakim Ryan, obviously is going to steal the spotlight. Julius Bergman's going to steal the spotlight because these guys all have, you know, they're all been in the system for a while. Bergman's like a second round pick rather. So, I mean, you know, those guys are obviously going to steal the spotlight when they do well. And then obviously all the good things going on up front, a guy like Middleton kind of gets lost in the shuffle because he doesn't put up the offensive numbers, but yeah, he's been really, really good. And we need to make this a thing where everyone knows that he's good.
And
it's, hashtag or something.
Yeah, well, we got to work on a Jacob Middleton hashtag. So far, I think we've got Dynamite Danny.
Right.
We have Howitzer Heed.
Yeah, Middleton needs one.
Yeah. Timo Time obviously is infamous. We've tried tracking that one down. I don't know where that came from. And then Teal Steel. So yeah, we'll have to come up with something for Middleton here.
Yeah, he needs to. He just. Because it's unfortunate that with everything going on, he's kind of been lost in the shuffle on just how good he's been. So we need to make people aware. I'm down with this plan. What did you think of what do you think of Timo Meyer's game? I don't know what I was going to ask. So let's touch on Timo since he went down.
You know, I thought he was solid. You know, overall, you know. There's still a lot of things that I feel like, you know, Timo Meyer, and he had a goal, you know, had the power play goal tonight.
Yep.
But this is where Timo can learn. This is where he can get more comfortable, you know, playing that game, even in the AHL, kind of some of those, you know, junior hockey tendencies that we were seeing at the NHL level. They're not mm-hmm. going to work at the AHL level either. They once in a while, maybe, you know.
Yeah.
In the NHL, never, you know, unless something absolutely breaks down. But at the AHL level, that's going to come out of his game as well. I thought he was actually chasing the puck around a little bit. I felt like he was kind of out of system on a couple shifts. But again, he's a 20-year-old, you know, first-year professional rookie.
Yeah,
these things are going to happen, and this is where you learn the professional game.
Would it really be the worst thing for him to kind of just do what Mikko Rantanen did last year and just kind of destroy the league?
I think that should be the goal, and it's a bit of what we were hoping for with Mirko Mueller. You know, leave him down here, really settle in, get comfortable, get familiar, really have a home, and know that you've got that role. It'll be interesting because the Sharks, you know, we got the trade deadline here that's coming right up. Mm-hmm. So for Doug Wilson, you not only have to worry about the San Jose Sharks, but now you have to look down at the San Jose Barracuda and got to figure out what's best for the prospects kind of as a whole on their development. And we, in my opinion, we saw that with the Tommy Wingles trade where he brought in, Zach and Buddy to this squad to add some beef with Buddy Robinson adding some skill as well. I think that was a trade that really signaled reinforcements for the junior Sharks, as they were, that they're gearing up for a deep playoff run.
Yeah, no, I agree. I really, really like Stortini. I'm kind of whatever on. I mean, you already had Gallant there. Robinson, I've been really, really happy with that acquisition. And yeah, I mean, if you just watch the Sharks and you're just like, man, we gave up Tommy Wingles for nothing, and you know, and I get that sentiment, but for the farm team, I think Buddy Robinson's been a really nice addition to the Barracuda. He's fit in really, really well. Especially when you have guys getting called up all the time. Like we have Goldobin and Sorensen up right now. You have you have guys like that. Like, you know, you have guys like that that are going up and down, and, you know, Carpenter has been up, and obviously Timo's been up, and you've seen guys kind of get cycled in and out. So to have a guy like Buddy Robinson down there that can kind of slot into your, you know, your middle six, mm-hmm. I think that's a good, you know, that's a good thing to have.
And I think Buddy's going to he's going to continue to adjust to this team. When you watch him, he still plays a bit of that traditional dump and chase mode. He's not quite fully acclimated to the puck possession transition game that is the Barracuda's hallmark, but that's going to take time. You know, he's only been with the Barracuda 8 games, 9 games or so, came in just at the start of the run. So he's got another, you know, 10, 12 games, plenty of time in the regular season to really acclimate to his teammates and kind of get on board with the system.
Yeah, no, I agree. What did Tim Heed, obviously. Were you surprised that Mirko Mueller went back up instead of Heed with Sorensen today?
A little bit, but at the same time, it's, you know, they're a seventh defenseman, and they're going to sit outside of, you know, an injury in warmups. So there's really, you know, with Sorensen, you know, you can match up. If you need a more speed, he can slot in there. LeBanc's there outside of some cap savings, some paper moves, maybe a game here or there. He's not going to be there for the Barracuda's stretch run. But that seventh defenseman, and when DeMelo comes back, that's really going to settle things down and I think really prepare the Barracuda for the playoffs. That's going to give them some time. So is it surprising? A bit, but if it's just going to be a, you know, a press box tour, why not?
I was surprised. I think the where I was surprised from wasn't that like the players that got called up, because I figured that it was going to be, you know, I figured there two guys would play today and then they would go up tomorrow. I was more surprised that they called people up today instead of letting them play and then calling guys up tomorrow is kind of what I expected. Like I thought, like if Timo was going to go back up, it would have been tomorrow to sit in the press box after playing tonight.
I would generally agree, except here in San Jose, we're pretty much just an arc away from another flood down here. So SFO and SJC both had a lot of flight cancellations. So maybe it was, hey, there's a plane leaving. We could get you on it. We don't know about tomorrow. So with weather concerns, okay, maybe.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I consider the weather.
Yeah, it was bad. This I live in downtown San Jose, and there were trees down everywhere. I mean, it was brutal out there this morning. So it could just, and it's the rain's really coming down now. So maybe it was just a matter of excuse me. That was the plane that was going to get off the ground.
Yeah. No, I was just surprised because I figured, yeah, I mean, that makes more sense now that I consider the weather, because but I'm kind of like, you know, whoever goes up tomorrow isn't playing, you know, whoever goes, like those guys, Mirko Mueller, Marcus Sorensen, they're not playing.
Right.
Unless something catastrophic happens, they're not playing.
Right.
And so I think it surprised me that they were out today, I guess, but taking the weather in consideration, I mean, that makes perfect sense.
The other question is, you know, kind of what's going on with Logan Couture. He's had illness, he's had this, he's had that.
Yeah.
And, you know, is maybe there's just he's a little more banged up than they're leading to believe. But you're right.
On the radio when he sat out the one game, I guess Kevin LeBanc let slip that his back was sore on the radio broadcast when he was being interviewed.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I've been told. I didn't hear it with my own ears, but I heard it from people I trust. So I don't
know. Gotcha. See, and that's the thing, right? You know, and that's part of what having such a strong farm team allows you. You know, why are you risking Logan Couture, you know, for these, especially like this 5-game Eastern Conference swing? You know, that's where you shut him down, and it's, hey, you get right. We can add a Marcus Sorensen. We can add a Timo Meier, a Kevin LeBanc. We've got the horses to slot in there. Because, and we, you know, everyone has said this all season long, this team is just going through the regular season. It's going to qualify for the playoffs. The real test comes in the spring. I wouldn't be rolling the dice on Logan Couture, especially when you have so many kids down here that can step in and contribute.
No, I completely agree. I mean, yeah, exactly. I mean, you've got depth in the system. You've got better depth in the system than you've ever had, at least as far as call-ups go. I mean, you have able bodies that can come in and play all right. And I mean, you know, it's nice when you can, you know, Nikolai Goldobin is going to get his first look this year tomorrow.
Right.
And that is just crazy to me because, you know, for a guy who was so down on Goldobin this summer, like complete 180 on Goldobin this year. And I'm excited to see him play tomorrow. Like I'm genuinely like I'm more jacked, I think, about that than anything else about the game, is watching and seeing what Goldobin can do at the NHL level. I like the fact that, you know, I kind of said, you know, we've kind of said on a couple occasions, you know, top six or bust player, but when you've got Thomas Hertl on your third line center, then I think that could work.
I think it definitely could, you know, and with Goldobin, he's not the fastest guy.
No,
you know, as far as straight line speed, but he processes the game very well and at a high rate. So even though the feet might not get there, the head's there. And yeah. With a player like Tomáš Hertl, that's where those types of things can really get dangerous if those two are able to click. But, you know, you look at it and the Sharks send down a Timo Meier who was performing. I mean, he was holding his own, maybe not
succeeding. He had good games and he had bad games. That last game was completely like, if I'm Timo Meier, I'm completely getting that out of my brain. Like, just pretending that game never happened. Because
right. Burn the tape.
Yeah, you burn the tape on that one. That game was awful. But, you know, but something, I mean, it wasn't like he was alone in that. Like, the whole team needs to burn that game.
Right. But you look at it, they send down a Timo Meier, they're able to call up a Nikolai Goldobin. They've still got a Ryan Carpenter and a Danny O'Regan to choose from. You know, this team, it's an embarrassment of riches. And Sommer has even said it. You know, there's really not much you miss on any of these guys, right? You know, they get called up. You know what you're getting. You know you're getting a capable player. It's not like some of these other teams. You call up a guy and you just pray that he doesn't make some terrible mistake.
Yeah. No, I agree. I just want to go through some numbers from the game here quick, just for those who were not able to watch and are tuning in. Heat actually outshot the Barracuda 30-26. The Barracuda were successful on 2 of 4 of their penalties, and they killed 3 of 4 Stockton power plays. You know, and your 3 stars. Who are your 3 stars? Always good to see. Nikita Yevplov's first start of the game with 2 goals, who I just can't, like, this again. This is a guy I just can't say enough about. And again, you know, you have all these guys that are doing so well, and, you know, and I just can't get over how much I love Nikita Yevplov this year. Like, it just seems silly when you've got guys like Dan O'Regan and, you know, but that line, I mean, that Sharche with him, Sharche and Haluka, I mean, that's just a silly good line. I love that line.
Yeah, that line brings a whole lot of everything.
Yeah.
You know, and the key with Jeff Loves, and I've said it before, but it bears repeating, his skating is so much improved. Mm-hmm. And that's where, when you start talking prospects and things, you know, if the skating isn't abysmal, and there are some where, you know, you just watch the feet, you watch the edge work, you know, their hips, and some guys, it's just, there's not enough to even work with. Jeff Blaz has really stepped it up, worked really hard, especially his first couple steps, I've noticed they're much more productive. And that's allowing him, I think, to have this success.
Yeah, I was asked on Twitter about Sharche. What is your take on Sharche at this point in the season as far as how he's done? Obviously, like, he started out on that stupid line with with LeBanc and Goldobin that was just destroying it. Now he's kind of, you know, he's kind of settled into this nice, kind of just, like you said, jack of all trades role with Haluka and Yevplov. What do you take on Sharche so far this year?
You know, I think a lot of teams would be thrilled to have a prospect like a Rourke Chartier come in as a rookie, you know, and put up 22 points in 43 games now. He's got 10 goals, 12 assists. You know, he's taking a turn on the penalty kill. He's on the power play. I think that we're not appreciating a player like a Rourke Chartier or even a Nikita Yevplov, because you all of a sudden you've got a Meier and you've got a LeBanc and you've got a Goldobin who's turned it around. So I think that's spoiling fans a little bit. But Rourke Chartier has had, I think, an excellent rookie year, and it hasn't come without its lumps.
Right.
But you look at what he's contributing. You know, I think he's well on pace for that middle six role that I think he's capable of. He's not a big guy, but he plays a pretty heavy game. His skating is good. He's got good instincts. You know, this is a player that maybe, you know, probably not this year, and maybe gets a cup of coffee next year. But, you know, a couple years of seasoning, he could certainly be a player for the San Jose Sharks.
I think it's just, it's for him, like, I feel bad for him kind of too, though, because, like, you've come into the system, and this system, like, you know, the Sharks prospect pool, I mean, yeah, you have Timo Meier and you have Goldobin, who, you know, Goldobin's starting to look like he could be that top line winger again. Timo Meier, I still think, you know, the upside's there. He just needs to figure it out, and I think he will. But beyond that, you know, you kind of get into this middle or even just bottom nine, kind of just solid, just group of just bottom nine guys. And, you know, it's going to be hard for him to break in, though, because, I mean, he's still, you know, you've got Danny O'Regan. I don't know where do you think Danny O'Regan is going to finish? What's the ceiling on Danny O'Regan?
I think Danny O'Regan, you know, he's not the biggest guy. Mm-hmm. You know, size is going to be a consideration there. And really you look at all the Sharks prospects that have made up this excellent cohort coming into the Barracuda. Most of them are, you know, between 5'10 and 6 foot. There's really no, none of those traditional, you know, big centers, those 6'3",
6'4",
you know,
yeah.
Right. Like a Mark Jankowski, you know, that we saw tonight for the AHL Heat, who himself is having a heck of a year and is really turning, you know, doubters into believers. You know, with O'Regan, I feel like he's, again, kind of that middle six. I don't know if he's got the size to contribute as a true number one center. Mm-hmm. And those are hard to find. You know, that's...
Oh, yeah. I'm just wondering if, do you see him as a two or a three, I think is my question.
I see him as a borderline two. You know, his vision and his playmaking ability is excellent. The size at the next level is a concern, mm-hmm. But like the skating, the vision, the playmaking, the offensive instincts, all that's there.
And look, we've seen a lot of small guys, you know, come in and kind of make their own way in the game now. I don't think it's... Right. I don't think it's as hard for a smaller guy to break through at this point, you know, like for a long time, you know, my favorite saying was always, you know, it's up to the little guy to prove he can play and the big guy to prove that he can't
right.
in the NHL. And I think those days are starting to kind of go by the wayside, thankfully, because we're seeing a lot of guys break through. And I'm not saying Danny O'Regan's Johnny Gaudreau, but you still see a lot of the same, you know, a lot of the same offensive instincts and whatnot. I mean, obviously, I'm not saying that, you know, do not quote me and say Danny O'Regan's going to turn into Johnny Gaudreau, please, because it's not going to happen. But I think he can fit in that kind of mold of player where he has the smarts to not get, you know, to not get himself destroyed at the same time right. with his eyes. Like, he's got the awareness.
Now, Johnny Gaudreau's a winger.
That's true.
Right? And so I'm assuming... and I guess we all are, Danny O'Regan at the pivot, at the center. Mm-hmm. He's and the Sharks roster, you know, we've talked about this as well. The Sharks top six, they're pretty much all centermen. You know,
yeah.
When you had the captain's line, it was three centers that just kind of figured out to, you know, the wing position as well. If you can play center, you can play wing. So could Danny O'Regan be a playmaking winger? Then I think you could start talking, you know, he's got the offensive chops where he might be a 1-2 liner, you know, mm-hmm. on the wing.
Yeah.
Kind of the transition.
Head control.
Yeah. You know, and we've seen Pavelski kind of take that same transition, right?
Yes.
What's going on over there?
Oh, just in the chat, just talking about the Stockton Heat play-by-play. The gentleman that does the Stockton Heat play-by-play. Very, very animated at times.
Yeah. know, it's interesting because, you know, you up on press row, there's not many of us up there for the Barracuda game, but boy, you can hear, gosh, I'm blanking on the name, him and the Condors announcer.
Right.
those are two very, loud individuals.
Yes. Yes, they are. It was funny to listen to, because it's just like, it was just so all over the place. And look, I get it's an AHL announcer, and I'm not gonna, you know, I mean, I'm not trying to be mean spirited. It was just, you know, this isn't fun. Like, I get it's a, you know, it's, you start out and you learn and you hope that you get to do something bigger at some point. But yeah, I was just like, okay, this is okay, I guess. I don't want to be mean. I just, you know what I mean? Like, I want to be, you know.
Well, I mean, everyone's got their own delivery.
Yeah. 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 You know? It's at least we're kind of, I feel like we've been kind of blessed with, like, yeah, I don't mind Nolenberger. I think Nolenberger's fine. And Lindqvist before him was good. I mean, and, you know, in the NHL, we have awesome people, unless it's Dave Mailey on the radio. But that's, you know, other than that, I mean, one Dave Mailey out of a, you know, out of a Baker and a Rusinowski and a and a Hahn, I mean, you can't really, you know, you have to have one, I guess.
Brandon Kisker, that's the gentleman's name. Yeah, just saw that come across, but you know, it's I don't know. I honestly usually watch the games with almost no sound anyway, so I can just tune into what's going on.
Right.
But it's whatever.
It's late. I need sound. I need to be stimulated by conversations.
So. Oh, looking over at our Mollis, how are you seeing his season unfold? What are your thoughts on him?
I mean, he's still a work in progress. I mean, he's come along so far in such a short time, but I'm always just nervous whenever there's too much pressure down low. Cause it doesn't, to me, that's where I feel like he gets in a lot of trouble, is he can't really handle, you know, he still can't handle having so many guys so close to him in the net.
Right.
Where I think, you know, over in Europe, like, he doesn't, you know, you don't have guys constantly in your grill all the time. And I think he's still having a hard time adjusting to that still, but he's done, you know, he's done better. I mean, I didn't like some of the goals tonight, but I mean, Troy Groznik can't play every game.
And, well, the Ontario Reign are trying it. They've started Jack Campbell 31 games in a row.
Well, I mean, and look at what that's got them. I mean, I don't think that's any coincidence where, you know, I mean, because Jack Campbell kind of has been Jack Campbell of late. You know, the Reign are another team that, you know, I think they're 5-5 in their last 10. Yeah, there's some overtime losses in there, but, you know, that's a lot to ask of a Jack Campbell.
Yeah. I think Armalis is coming around. I mean, I guess at the end of the day, if your goalie's winning, really, what else, you know, what else can you ask for? He's got 12 wins on the season, 2 shutouts. You know, his save percentage is not pretty. He's at an .895 right now. But, you know, if the goal is to give up just less goals than the other guy, he's doing that. And he's had 2 wins on this this 10-game streak, and now we'll have, you know, Troy Groznik in net for tomorrow night's matchup against the Reign. So
yeah, so we got, yeah, I mean, I just going in the chat here, I think that, you know, I agree. Look, at Armalis absolutely lets in some softies. I still think he moves funny. And that was brought up in the chat too. Christine is in Mandeville's car, and she says that Armalis kind of moves funny, and I kind of agree. It's not as bad when he first started. When he first started, I'm like, I don't even know what this is. Like,
right?
Like, I'm like, you know, I can strap on the pads and move around really badly, but the way he was moving when he first started was completely like, it was like Dominic Hasek, only not with the good goaltending.
Like you said, you know, he's come such a long way in such a short time. You know, you've got to be impressed on a guy that's really never skated on North American ice in his career. And now is at least a dependable backup.
Yeah. I think if he wants to come back next year, I'm all for it. Like I am that far with Armalis where I would bring him back next year if he wants to come back.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, and it's going to be an adjustment, and especially with goalies, you know, coming over from Europe, there's some goalies that do stupendous on the bigger ice and struggle, you know, here and vice versa. But yeah, I would be completely fine with the Sharks bringing back Armalis, especially when you consider, you know, Grosnick's a UFA. He is having one heck of a year. I've been meaning to bring this up, and so I'm going to put asterisks. I'm going to put everything around this.
Okay.
I'm always concerned when a goalie comes out of nowhere and puts up a stellar year. You know, consistency is what you want to see out of goaltending. You want to see as they're progressing. And we talked about this on Writer's Room, right?
Yep.
You want to see save percentages and things like that that are in a trend. That way you know what you're getting. You know, Grosnick has been a 903, a 906, and then an 894, and now all of a sudden a 933.
Right. Yeah, you know, that's nerve-wracking. I mean, look at, you know, I mean, I think that goes back to what we were talking like on Writer's Room about Andrew Hammond, where it's like he's, you know, heading back down to the AHL, and it's like, should we really be surprised by that? I don't think so.
And that's not to say that Grosnick couldn't, you know, and he did put in a ton of work, and
he did.
You know, there's been a couple articles written on it. I spoke to him, you know, during rookie camp, and he worked his butt off with some goalie coaches, and he does not look like the same player. So, you know, this is where you can look at it and say it's not just a stellar year. You know, you see the mechanics, you see the footwork, he's staying on his feet longer, but it does give cause for pause, or it is cause for pause. There we go. Get that right.
Yeah. A question in the chat. Who do you think the final four, who are the four teams that make it out of the Pacific? Because it looks like, based on their website this year, it looks like there's no crossovers. It's just straight divisional. Do you think it basically is just the four teams that are kind of in there now, or do you think Tucson might fall out? And a team like Texas or Bakersfield could catch them.
I think the Barracuda, the Gulls, and the Reign can start game planning.
Yeah.
I think that I don't see anything below them that could really challenge to knock them out, right? Because that would mean that those three teams would have to stumble so hard that these other teams would have to win their games and then leapfrog up in points. Right now, Texas Stars are in fourth, right?
They passed Tucson? Okay.
Yeah, they're at 51 points and a 543 percentage.
Okay.
Tucson's behind them in win percentage at 534, has 47 points, but has three games in hand. Interestingly, Tucson and the Barracuda, and now actually the Heat, have played the fewest games in the AHL at 44.
That's crazy.
Pretty much the only team that I think is 100% out of it is the San Antonio Rampage. They're at 52 games played already, and they're just down there. And I don't see, you know, watching them, I don't see the pieces that are necessary for a run.
No, the Rampage are terrible this year.
Yeah. I'm surprised that the Heat have fallen, you know, this far. And we saw it tonight, you know, against the Barracuda. They've got a ton of talent.
Here's the thing though, because the one thing that was interesting from their commentary though, is this a situation possibly where you have too much talent, but none of it's cohesion? Like there's no cohesion. You have too many individuals and not enough. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, you look at the players that they've got in those skilled positions, and like a Hunter Shinkarik or an Emil Poirier, those are guys that's kind of the book on them. You know, even in their draft years, those were both 2013s. First rounders in 2013. So you could see it, you know, that's been kind of the book on them. They are kind of individualistic players. But then you see like a Mark Jankowski who does it all and can be right. a glue player. You know, Oliver Shillington's a defenseman that I'm very high on. You know, you have to deal with his defensive gaffes here or there, but I think he's got some very high-end talent, played in the World Juniors for Team Sweden.
Right.
I think their goaltending, especially with John Gillies, you know, he had the hip surgery and lost all of last year. So he's still, I think, figuring it out as he comes back. But I could see that. I could certainly see the argument where the cohesion is the issue.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, goaltending definitely shouldn't completely skid under the radar there, because I think, you know, you brought it up. John Gillies hasn't really been that good this year, and that's really, you know, hurt them. I mean, look at when you score five goals, you score 4 to 5 goals, you should win a game.
Definitely. And you know, he had a, I think, if I remember right, 6 games last year, he was 3-2-1. With a .930 save percentage, you know, obviously super small, right. Aaron Dell-esque sample size, right? But that also lines up with his 3 years at Providence. So, you know, I think this year is an aberration. I look at it where he can strike back into form. I mean, they're tied with Bakersfield as far as win percentage.
Yeah.
So with the Roadrunners there, man, seeing what I'm doing is I'm stalling as I'm working through all of this.
That's okay.
I think the Roadrunners could get in there. Aiden Hill, he's a former Portland Winterhawk. He was an undrafted free agent. He's played really well for the Roadrunners. I think the Roadrunners could get in there over the Texas Stars. I think the Condors and the Heat, they'd have a really hard time.
Didn't Texas just give the Roadrunners Aiden Hill?
I'm sorry?
I thought Aiden Hill moved.
No, this is his rookie season. He played last year with the Portland Winterhawks.
Got it.
Started 69 games for them last year.
Yeah, so you got Troy Groznik coming up at the end of the year. Aaron Dell's got another year left on his deal. Something that I got into a conversation with a bunch of people on an article I wrote, I'm sure the Finn, was about Groznik. Like, to me, like, Groznik's a guy where he had a path laid out for him. You know, they gave him the 2-year deal with the one way, you know, this being the one way year of his deal. And, you know, basically this, he was, I think, if you asked the front office when that deal was signed, that was him and not Aaron Dell that they expected to be with the Sharks. Now that, you know, Aaron Dell kind of took his opportunity. Do you think that, you know, that was his one chance and poof, or do you think that there's still a path, maybe not with the Sharks, but is there a path for Troy Groznik to get an NHL shot?
I think there's certainly a path. You know, you look at the teams that have struggled to find reliable backup goaltending. Troy Grosnick's going to get a contract. He might have to go for a two-way and compete in camp for that backup spot. But he's going to be in some organization's conversation for that role. And the other thing, Vegas is coming into the league. That's going to open up really 4 more jobs, right?
Right. You're
going to have a starter, a backup at the NHL level, and the same at the AHL level.
Well, it depends, because they're going to share a team probably off the top, right? So maybe not.
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the plan is for that. That's a Kevin Lacey question, because he seems to be all over this stuff. But, I mean, if they're sharing a team, then, you know, then maybe not. But yeah, once they have their own AHL team, then for sure it's 4 jobs.
Right. But it there's at least, you know, capability, right? So if they're sharing a team, there could be a team that doesn't have much goaltending, you know, prospects.
Right.
So, you know, not everyone, you know, is stocked up there.
Sorry. If you watched Pucknology Writers Room last week.
Oh my gosh.
I even listened to it after, and I almost never listen to any show that I'm on after these days.
What else we got over here? Any other questions in the chat?
Looking. Being called out.
Oh, Mandy and Christine had their first away CUDA game, so very congratulations nice. To them. I love the Stockton Barn. I've gone out there probably 20 games or so the last couple of years. I love that barn. I think it's a great barn. So I hope you enjoyed the game there.
It seems nice.
What do you? So Kevin, the Kevin Lacey,
We are all Kevin.
Asked how what we thought of Rasmus Anderson. Ian?
What did I do? So what about him?
Rasmus Anderson?
I like him. What am I being asked? Sorry, I didn't understand.
Kevin was asking for our opinions on Rasmus Anderson.
Oh, well, my opinion on him? I you know what? I haven't seen a ton of Rasmus Anderson, but what little I've seen, for the most part, I've liked. I know it's a really shitty cop-out answer, but if it's not a Barracuda player, like this year's been really hard for me to keep up on other things. I've watched and I've tried to start watching some more junior tape lately, right. Like just going back and watching some junior games and stuff, trying to watch Blickfield and Balsers and a lot of Western Hockey League hockey.
Both of whom had goals tonight, by the way.
Yes. Doing really good. And I haven't really, you know, other than playing against the Barracuda, which is, you know, you got to see players just not playing the same team, right? You want to see them playing a variety of different games. Because right now the Barracuda is kind of steamrolling everyone. But I mean, still, I've liked what I've seen so far. I think they've got a player there for sure. Go ahead, Zach.
I think he's been very good, you know, especially his... You know, he played, you know, with the Barry Colts. So I got to see him a couple times live last year and was really impressive out there, you know, skating with Kevin LeBanc and Sandoe and all those guys. Andrew Mangiapane. But, you know, he's translated well, you know, and he's another one of those young players. There's a lot of players in tonight's Heat and Barracuda game that in 2020 you're going to be seeing in Flames and Sharks games.
I agree with. There's so much talent in that Heat team. I just haven't been able to watch enough of them not against the Barracuda to really to really, you know, make any solid anything on them. You know what I mean? Like, cause you want to evaluate these guys. You can't just do it playing against the same team, right? Like I can't just watch the Barry Colts, the two games they played against the Hounds and then, you know, and then come with all my, you know, and then come with all the Heat. You gotta watch these teams against other teams. So, and I've tried to do that this year. This year's been a real handful.
Yeah, Anderson's a player that, you know, he's 20 years old and you see that offense translating. You know, he was nearly a point per game player in the O, and to be at almost half a point a game in the AHL at such a young age, I think that really bodes well for his future.
Who should coach the CUDA if Sommer's never going anywhere. They're just going to weekend at Bernie's them, just wheel him behind the bench. It's going to be fine. He's been there too long. He's not going anywhere.
Yeah. He's entrenched.
Yeah.
You know, he might retire, but
I don't think they'll let him.
No. I mean, the front office, you know, loves Sommer. He's been with the team on a number of stops. I think he does a very good job. I know some of the fan base kind of has mixed feelings on Roy Sommer, and I think he's a darn good development coach.
I've really come along on Roy Sommer this year. I'm not going to lie. You know, the one thing with Roy Sommer is you have to look at what he had to work with for years.
Right.
And the AHL team for the Sharks was a barren freaking wasteland. Like there's no way around it. It was a barren wasteland where you had maybe a couple of players here and there that might have been something. And, you know, and then there's some, you know, there's some poor drafting of some of the players that there were down there marinating. So it was not only you had prospects that didn't work out and probably weren't going to work out. I don't blame Roy Sommer for guys like Nick Petrecki and right. and a few other, like Lucas Kaspar. And it was just, there was a stretch of really poor drafting in San Jose, period.
Yeah. And it's, you know, you're giving Roy Sommer, I mean, not even pieces, right?
Right.
You know, and even last year's Barracuda, I was talking to, I got to meet Cuda Phil, at the, last home game. And he was even saying, you know, the first eight games of last year, he was like, oh my gosh, what did we get into? You know, they snuck into the playoffs, but.
Because Aaron Dell dragged them kicking and screaming.
Exactly. And you look at the differences between last year's roster and this year, and it's night and day.
Yeah. That was did you hear about the Alaska Aces might be on the brink of folding? That was sad news.
No, I hadn't heard that. That is terrible news.
That's news that broke today that they are considering folding, I'm assuming financial reasons, but I haven't read into it yet. It was all the buzz on the Twitters.
They're in the ECHL now. It's tough. You know, it's tough for.
It's tough for an AHL team probably being in a place like that, let alone an ECHL team.
Right. You know, and you're looking at, you know, St. John's Ice Caps, you know, they're relocating, being out there in the Atlantic. That's a bummer though. I mean, the Alaska Aces, they've been around forever.
I know. Like I can't remember a time before the Alaska Aces. Like they're just kind of like always been that team. Like even before, like there was a long time. Like my newfound love of, like, you know, not NHL hockey. I mean, I always loved the OHL, but I didn't really, you know, it was more of a fan thing, right? Like I was there as a fan and I just wanted the Hounds to win. But I mean, it's only been about maybe 5 years where I really started to really, you know, start looking at everything, you know, how everyone gets there and, you know, where that really kind of got my interest. And you can thank the internet for that. But yeah, just like, I can't remember a time without the Alaska Aces. So, I mean, to have them fold would be just criminal. Someone needs to go and save them.
They were founded in 1989.
Wow.
And that's, I mean, that's
as long as I can remember.
Yeah. I mean, that's impressive to have carved out, you know, that type of longevity in a league that there's not a whole lot of.
Right. No, I mean.
That might be a nice way to put that.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's true. I mean, you look at, so many teams in the ECHL have come and gone over time. And, you know, then now they've merged with the Central Hockey League. And it's tough. It's tough when you're that, you know, that lower tier, man, because... You know, I don't really follow. I mean, I'm going to be honest. I don't really follow the ECHL all that closely if a guy's down there, then if he comes back up to the AHL, then he's, you know, he's worth paying attention to again. But you get the occasional guy that comes up from the ECHL. But if you end up, you know, playing consistently in the ECHL, I mean, it's pretty much a death sentence for your career at that point.
It makes it very, very difficult. The only caveat there, I would say, is goalies.
Right. Yep.
You know, like Aaron Dell, Ville Husso, who's playing really well for the Chicago Wolves right now. You know, there's players that definitely, especially goalies, that can go down there and, you know, their development really happens in game situations.
Right.
You know, at this point in their career, right? Yep. All the practice in the world's not really going to help. It's facing rubber.
We've got a guy, Jamie Murray, down playing in the ECHR now just because there's no room for him on the AHL team.
Right.
You know, so it's for goaltending, I agree. I think then I kind of still keep an eye, but I just, like, I know I get asked and I'm like, it doesn't excite me. It's such a, you know, it's too much time to invest in a league where a lot of guys are just never going to be anything.
So our ECHL update of the night will be Jamie Murray. He's got 31 games played, a 3.59 goals against average, and an 8.98 save percentage.
Fun fact, Riley, with Kevin Lacy. Sorry, go ahead.
Riley Gill, who backstopped the Allen Americans to the Kelly Cup last year. He's got 28 games played, a 2.19 and a 9.35. So looks like Jamie Murray's getting some starts. I would imagine that's an injury, though, because everything I know about Allen,
they play their guys.
They play their guys. So something had to have happened with Riley Gill, especially with those kind of numbers.
But the the Sharks, Barracuda, and Allen American are all in the first place.
Yes, they are.
Cool. Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, ECHL questions, guys, I'm not the guy to ask because I don't care. And I want to pretend that I care, but I don't. I really, there's so much hockey that I try to keep track of. Like, there's only so many hours in a day.
You know, and it's,
there's just only so many hours in a day. I love junior hockey, and I'm, you know, I've criminally underwatched junior hockey this year. You know, I've watched obviously a ton of Barracuda, and I'm writing about the Barracuda now, which has been really awesome. But, you know, and I still got to watch the Sharks on top of that. So it's, you know, and then other NHL teams to try and make sure I know what I'm talking about. It's hard.
So we're not going to have any like Teamra updates from second tier SHL now?
Nope. Sorry, not happening.
Well, then I guess we won't talk about Elias Pettersson next. Okay, moving on.
Moving on then. I mean, someone brought up the survey earlier. I just want to thank everyone for taking part in the survey. If you haven't yet, I think it's still pinned to the Pucknology Twitter account. So if you just go bring up the Pucknology Twitter account's profile, you can still do the thing for the writer's room survey. I'll probably kill it this weekend. But we really do appreciate all the feedback we've gotten on that. There's definitely some things that we've taken that we're going to take out of there and try and do. I think that, you know, one thing that's really hard for me to keep track of up here is NCAA. So Zach is going to help us out with that, I hope, if he can.
I'll try a little bit.
There seems to be a lot of demand for talk of our NCAA prospects because they get criminally undercovered because they're criminally not on TV.
I was going to say, I've got a number of tools at my disposal. I watch a lot of SHL, a lot of Liga, probably more WHL than I should, but hey, I'm a West Coast guy. You know, it's a lot easier. The times are easier for me. NCAA, yeah, that's tough. And especially with that, have you seen that strange thing they have with like CBS?
No.
They've got this crazy like pay portal.
Okay.
And for anyone that's watching that or listening and you've seen how the WHL or the Q or the OHL does it, you know, I'm familiar with that. And even that's a little strange. Or fast hockey. You know, that's another one. You know, to catch some USHL games. I have no idea what the hell's going on with the NCAA portal. I mean, I'm a pretty savvy guy. You know, outside of my fat thumbs, you know, when I'm trying to tweet from my phone, I literally cannot figure it out. Every time I try to buy a game, I just get frustrated and go watch a WHL replay.
Yeah. So we're gonna try though. We'll try and give you some updates. I know there's a couple of guys obviously down there I think that are really interesting, and we're going to try and do a little more of the, you know, the not AHL kind of profiles a little bit more. And that's why I'm trying to watch more Western Hockey League hockey again.
So Ian, I've got a question for you.
Sure.
If you had to draft an all-star squad from the San Jose Barracuda, who would it be? Three forwards, two defensemen, and, well, we know who the goalie is, so give us your three goalies and two defensemen.
Who's my three forwards and two defensemen if I had to go today? Even defensemen, I think, are pretty.
Yeah,
it's Heedon and Ryan. And with an honorable mention to Julius Bergman, who I've been so impressed with this year. He's got a long way to go, but he's really come into his own. I think when I did my prospect rankings last year, I killed Bergman. And if I do them this year, and I'm not sure if I'm going to, because again, I don't want to just talk out my ass through them. Bergman's definitely moving back up the list. As far as forwards go, I'm going to leave LeBanc and Timo out of it.
Yeah, that's fair.
So I would say it's got to be O'Regan. It's got to be Goldie, and then it gets interesting. O'Regan, Goldie. Man, so many places that I stick in that third. I'm going to go with, though, man, I'm so torn. I want Adam Holuka. I like Good Adam choice. Holuka as my third guy. I was really torn between him and Yevlovs and Sorensen, though. That was a really hard choice, but I'm going to go with Adam Holuka.
Yeah, it does get tough when you look at that other winger. You know, some guys have really kind of differentiated themselves. For me, I had O'Regan and I had Goldobin, mm-hmm. and then I had Sorensen. I feel like his so speed hard. Element. Yeah, I just feel like that's just he's so fast.
I love Sorensen. I love the way Holuka just gets in the paint and fights for every puck. You know, like you can, I think that's the thing with that third spot. I mean, there's guys, you got Sorensen who's, you know, fast, sick mitts. You've got Holuka who just gets in there and just goes to war with guys, you know, and then you've got a guy like Yevplovs who also, you know, has some nice mitts, but also, you know, really just put the work in. And you can see the work being put in. It's so hard. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, do you like a power forward? Do you like a nice shooter? Right. Do you know, it's like, what do you like? And I really like Adam Holuka. I think, you know, if for all the talk of, you know, everyone's like talks about how much they miss Ryan Clough, that's your Ryan Clough replacement right there.
Yeah. You know, another player and we've both kind of, he's underrated, but he's not, but I think he's underappreciated, is Ryan Carpenter. I think he could be in that conversation just because he can do absolutely anything.
Yep. Carpenter's a guy who I really, really like. And he's kind of like, to me, he's kind of like, he it annoys me because he's kind of like Barclay Goodrow, where it's just like, why are you still here?
Yeah. I think for Goodrow, I think that for me this year, And I don't know if it's some NHL-itis or what's going on,
right?
But I feel like the effort level has not been consistent with Goodrow. Right. Whereas I feel like Carpenter, shift to shift,
yeah,
you know, everything he's got is coming out, and that's that part where I think he could be in the conversation. And
For sure. Yeah. I just like I feel like they both have the tools that they could both be, you know, in a NHL team's bottom six. And I'm glad we have them. But like I Barclay Goodrow to me, I mean, if you're looking for a trade chip, I think that's your guy. If you're looking for something that might, you know, wash down a bad contract or something, I think if I'm a team, I might take a look at a Barclay Goodrow. Especially, I think, you know, this is a guy who's frustrated, who was in the NHL and just can't seem to get back. No matter what.
Right.
And right. I think it's gotten in his head now. And I think it's just for Barclay Goodrow, I feel like it's a change of scenery time for him.
I think that he's definitely a chip that's in play. I wouldn't be surprised either once we get past the season to see the Sharks trade a Barclay Goodrow to protect a player, you know, all on, you know, Nabokov in the expansion draft where, the Sharks shipped out that draft pick, so two draft picks, right? So neither team could select Nabokov. You know, saying, "Hey, here's Barclay Goodrow for future considerations," and there you go.
Yeah, Vince G in the chat, I think summed it up perfectly. Goldobin ditched his old compete level, and Goodrow picked it up.
Ooh, wow, that's a zinger, and I completely can see where.
Someone would, yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Oh. Sometimes it's the truth hurts,
Control
and
bin.
oh my gosh.
Kevin Lacey with the comment. Good trophy. Oh, I love it.
But that fits, because
Yeah.
we see Goudreau and he goes on these tears and he's, it just he skates well, he's got a heck of a shot, he's in stretches dominant at the AHL level.
Yes.
And then crickets.
Yeah, no, I just, and something funny here too, because like, the dog kicking incident, because I've heard it too many times. Honestly, for coup de Phil, this is just something where some people, I try to keep it light, and I try to, like, I am not a pro by any stretch of the imagination, but if someone from the Sharks organization wanted to talk to me, I'd want them to talk to me and not talk to me because I said something stupid. So for a long time, people were saying, oh, what do you do? Sleep with Peter DeBoer's wife? Blah, 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 blah. You know what? Kicking his dog seems a lot more like, if that got back to Peter DeBoer somehow, Peter DeBoer might be like, all right, whatever. But you got to be careful what you say when you do what we do, because we have talked to people. I mean, look at Pucknology. We've talked to Jeff Merrick. We've talked to, Jamie Baker. We've talked to guys in the organization, so obviously you don't want to burn bridges. So I mean, obviously, look at Peter DeBoer. Obviously, does not like Barclay Goodrow. I think that's pretty evident at this point.
He
He's a guy
doesn't
that.
fit in the current lineup.
Correct. Yeah, I'm not thinking he doesn't like him like as a person. I just think as his skill set doesn't match what Peter DeBoer wants from him. He doesn't fit in his system. And I'm not saying that, again, I'm not saying that, you gotta be careful with these. I'm not saying that, Peter DeBoer thinks Barclay Goodrow's an a-hole. I just think that he just doesn't fit in the system. So basically, instead of saying, something stupid or something inflammatory, or you don't want to upset people in the organization, so I say he kicked his dog, because I think that, it gets the point across that, yeah, obviously there's, he's a little bit out of favor as a player, but it's not inflammatory and stupid.
Yeah, it's the antithesis of Michael Haley, who does seem to fit in with what DeBoer wants. Goudreau's skill set just can't slot in to the spot that they'd want him.
No, I agree. And another question from Jessica Gittick, because I know Kevin Kurz brought this up. Do you see Goldobin being a trade chip?
Is
I
such a
know.
good question. I know. I talk constantly and I can't figure it, I can't say a word now.
Can I? I'll take a swing at this.
Yeah, go take a swing. Let me think and muddle
All
through
right.
this.
I understand how again, we want to be gentle to our fellow media people. But at the same time, I look at, I'm going to say this incredibly honestly. I think that Kevin Kurz, with all due respect to Kevin Kurz doesn't watch a whole lot of Barracuda hockey. And he, in his piece today, he kind of just seemed like he was relying on narratives that were, frankly, a year old. And, I just, if I was Kevin Kurz, I would just dodge questions about the Barracuda. And that's with all respect to Kurz. I think that, he has a job to do, and I think he does it better than he gets credit for. But when it comes to the Barracuda, he should just leave it alone. I don't see. Look, Goldobin would make an interesting change up, and if you were going to make a big deal, there's a good chance that Goldobin could be a part of it. You know, you're going to have to give up something to get something, especially this time of year. So, but I just don't think that the players that you would give up Goldobin to get, I don't think the Sharks are interested in. Sharks aren't interested in Matt Duchene. They're not, there's no way that that cap's going to work. I mean, it's a nice fantasy look at, would I like Matt Duchene on the San Jose Sharks? Absolutely. Who wouldn't? You'd be an idiot if you didn't.
Right.
But is that reality? No, it's not reality. So unless you're going to get a big piece like that, then yeah, you're going to have to send something the other way. And a team's going to want either Timo or Goldobin. And at that point, I let Goldobin go because I still think that Timo has the higher ceiling and is the more complete player, as much as I'm in love with what Goldobin's done this year. But do I think he's going anywhere? No, I don't think he got called up to showcase. I think he got called up because he's actually been really good this year.
Yeah.
And this, you know, this idea that, you know, like, it's so frustrating because obviously I understand it's the AHL team. So not everyone's going to, you know, like if you're watching this show, you're watching all our shows, especially like you're the hardcore hockey fan.
Right.
But the casual hockey fan, they don't, they're not watching this show, they're not watching, you know, so they go to people like Kevin Kurz because they're like, well, Kevin Kurz knows what he's talking about. And it's frustrating for me, who also, you know, covers this team, when you have like the, you know, the big guy saying, well, you know, basically spitting out narratives that are a year old, because you're just misleading people. And you have people go, oh yeah, he still, you know, doesn't back check, blah 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 blah. It's like, watch him. Like, you right. have the team in your city. Go watch him. Go make your own choice about it. Like, go see if Goldie, you know, make your own opinion, I think is what I'm saying. You have this team in your city. You can go see them. They're not in Worcester anymore. So I just wish more people, and I realize that the people that I'm preaching to right now don't need this preach, and I apologize. But I just wish more people would not, would go and actually see the Barracuda and see what they're about, rather than just rely on guys that don't really watch the team.
You good?
I'm good.
So I completely echo a lot of those sentiments. And I would say even the people that are following the Sharks, following the Barracuda, and then watching Barracuda After Dark when we take over the YouTube channel, they're the hardest of the hardcore. So,
right.
So these are the folks where watching a
post-game AHL show, I mean, it doesn't right. get more hardcore.
At this point, you all can just say, but next time somebody says, oh, I'm a hockey fan too, you can go, that's cute. You know? So Ian brought up a ton of really good points, and the narrative on Goldobin really over the last, I would say, 25, 30 games has to be rewritten. His play is at a level, and it has improved with the puck, away from the puck, shooting, passing, back-checking, forechecking. There's literally no part of his game that is not better today than it was in October, and light years ahead of what we all had to endure last year. Even though he right. put up some points, it was literally points or bust.
Yeah.
So now that I've got that out, I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say yes, he is a trade chip, but for Ian's reason, where his play now, the people that are going to the AHL games, that are scouting these, that are, you know, filing reports back to, you know, the directors of scouting or their regional people. And the Barracuda have had pretty consistently 2, 3, 4 scouts at every game. You know, that I check that out every single game I'm at. And I think I've missed one in the last 2 years. So I'm going to say, again, I'm going to say yes, but only because we've all seen what Doug Wilson has done, and he has pulled some rabbits out of his hat.
Yep.
You know, the flip side of that is you look at the majority of his trades, the big movers and shakers, they've been in the off season. You know, outside of really the Joe Thornton trade and a couple kind of misfires, you know, I think that it, I think it's a bit of a showcase, but I think it's setting it up further down the road, because this mm-hmm. summer after the expansion draft, I feel like the floodgates are going to open. Once the expansion draft is over, I think with the contracts, the UFAs, the new team coming in, a deep draft, maybe not a generational draft, but there's a club of players between like 10 and 40 that whoever's list you're looking at, they're jumbled all over.
Right.
So, you know, this could be the year where you would see a Doug Wilson trading up to 31 again, you know, like he did to get Jeremy Waugh, a player that he really likes. So I feel like a lot of these games, they're in the Sharks' best interest, but with the amount of talent that this prospect pool has, everybody's getting showcased.
Yep.
Whether you like it or not, it's like, hey, I've got a half dozen guys in the AHL. I have no problem calling up at any one time. Mm-hmm. Damn right, you better be taking a look at my kids.
Yep.
You know, they're that kind of good. And if you're not looking at them, you're not watching them, then you're not paying attention to your team. It's a yes, but statement for me.
Right.
I'm really warming to the idea of like a Matt Duchene style pickup in the offseason. Because Joe Thornton, one way or the other, is going to be 38.
Yep.
Right. I think Joe's having a great year. I think with his advanced age and never being the fleetest of foot, he's adapted his game well. But if you're not doing some estate planning, you know,
right,
to bring in another top two centerman to share that load with Logan Couture, because I think it's asking a lot out of a Danny O'Regan or a Rourke Chartier, you know, next year or, you know, in that really immediate foreseeable future. That might be asking a lot of them.
You don't think Hurdle could slot into the second line center?
Well, it's one of those things, right? So do you think Logan Couture is a bona fide, honest to God, number one center?
No.
I think he's one of the best number two centers in the NHL. I think his two-way game is terribly underrated. I think he is one of the top two or three number two centers in the league. Is he a number one?
He's a 1A at best.
Yeah, yeah. Or a 1B, right?
Yep.
And so if Couture is your 1B, and I think that's where a lot of the San Jose Sharks talent or success has relied upon is Couture being the next center up, amazingly.
Right.
That does leave, in theory, a job open, and that, you know, we're seeing the talent trickle down the lineup. And even with the Barracuda, we're seeing it. The Barracuda roll three talent lines, right? The bottom line of Satterini, Blackwell, and Shane Warren or Gallant. That's their fourth line. That's their grind, smash mouth. Hey, it's still AHL. It's a lot of pain. It's a lot of pain. But they have three skilled lines. And so you've got to mimic that. You know, you've got to mimic kind of what's working in the NHL.
And that's the hard thing, too, because you with the like the AHL, like we've brought this up a bunch of times. I mean, you look at the system that Roy Sommer's employed, it's our system. Like, it's the Shark system.
Right.
And I used R because it's 2 in the morning. I hate when I say R, we, or something stupid like that. All right.
Us.
Yes. I'm not a shark. I'm just a guy who watches them on TV. sorry, I had to get that out of my system. But, you know, it's frustrating to see how well it's working in the AHL and how well it's not working in the NHL this year. It's been frustrating.
Sportini. Kevin's trying to get my... Now I can't spell kryptonite either in the chat. Look at that. No. I'm just falling apart here. Falling apart. But yeah, you know, and so looking, you know, long-term, and that gets back to the O'Regan question, right? Is he a winger? Is he a center? You know, where do you slot that in? Because if you can pick up a Duchene in the offseason, it is going to take a Goldobin, Mueller, first, second round pick, something like that,
yeah.
Right? Or a Joakim Ryan if they're paying attention. Mm-hmm. You know, honestly, at this point, who would you rather the Sharks trade, a Mirko Mueller or a Joakim Ryan? You know, if you really, if you're talking about what to do in the offseason.
I, you know what, I'm probably softer on Mirko Mueller than most people. But you know, there's still an incredible amount of risk that he doesn't pan out. So I would absolutely keep a Joakim Ryan over Mirko Mueller at this point.
So if it ended up costing you, you know, Mueller does have the name recognition, mm-hmm. you know, so if, you know, he's got the size, he's got the skating, and maybe another team says, hey, a change of scenery will work for you. But he's not going to carry that by himself.
I still think that Mirko Mueller is a guy, like, I know that the Sharks are going to have some really good defensemen available to take. And I haven't looked too hard at the defensemen that they can take from other teams. But, you know, Vegas is a team that might look at a Mirko Mueller and say, look at, you know, we got to try and keep under the cap here somehow. And just like that, Mirko Mueller's gone.
Yeah. I think he's definitely on a short list. You know, I think everyone's in agreement that the Sharks are losing a defenseman. Mm-hmm. And I think it is going to be out of those, we'll call them the bottom four. Mm-hmm. Right. Probably a Mirko Mueller, Dylan DeMello, Schlemko, if he's not protected, and Brendan Dillon. I think the right. Sharks, you know, one of those guys is going.
Yep.
One of those.
No, four. I agree.
But do you, if he's still there, you know, but again, mm-hmm. you know, if they take a Mueller, you know, Vegas takes Mueller. That means DeMello's right. still there.
Yep.
That means your top six is still there, and you still have Joakim Ryan and a potential to re-sign Heat.
I hope so.
That's pretty good estate planning there.
Yep. No, I agree. I think they've got pieces that they can move into, you know, to save things around. What are your thoughts on Patrick McNally? Kevin's kind of asking about Patrick McNally here.
I definitely don't think he's the number three defender on the Barracuda. I think Bergman has really locked that down. I think Bergman has been the better of the Mueller-Bergman pairing. McNally had a very rough start in my viewings in 2016. In 2017, something's clicked. Maybe he just likes playing in odd years. I don't know. You know, but McNally, you know, kind of that real dominant force we saw over the summer. Where he really, I think, really opened my eyes, like, wow, you know, it's coming together. It kind of fell apart to start. But he's coming around. I still don't like how risky he is defensively. I feel like, you know, where Tim Heed and Joakim Ryan, they're creating offense.
But they're sound.
Right. They're positionally sound. They've got the skating and the smarts to back it up and know when to – you know, risk it. They read each other really well. McNally seems to want to play that game, but you can't do that when you're skating with Dan Kelly. And as much as we like him, like a Jacob Middleton, who's young and raw, you know, you have to understand where your role is and what's going on the ice and not just, you know, screw it. I'm going coast to coast, you know, like Space Ghost. You have to have better situational awareness of that. That's the kind of thing that really drives me nuts.
Yeah.
To just kind of see that disregard for the system, especially when with the other four defensemen and the forward groups, we see how well that system works when it's deployed properly.
Beyond Middleton, like you go through the thing. Like I'm fine with Heed and Ryan, obviously. Huge fans of Heed and Ryan. I'm, you know, like I said, I'm softer on Mirko than a lot of people, and I've made no bones about being a huge fan of Julius Bergman. And then you've got Middleton, and then pretty much, I don't know, I can't seem to find a guy that I like after that. Like, it seems like everyone that, you know, can slot into that slot, I'm never happy. whether it be Brodzinski or McNally. Like, I don't know. I'm not a big McNally fan at all.
Yeah. I think McNally has locked down a roster spot and a starting roster spot. I think he's definitely part of the top six. He skated a bit with Jacob Middleton. And I think that was a pretty smart pairing, and I like that. Middleton skates well for a big guy. Mm-hmm. He's responsible. He's got a good first pass. Dan Kelly, he works his butt off, and he is, he's a, the guys love him. He's a great locker room guy. But, you look at how this team's trying to play with an up-tempo, transition-based hockey, and it's not Dan Kelly's fault.
No, I agree. And I think with when you have guys like Stortini and Gallant already in the lineup, like, I don't, you know what I mean? Like, for Dan Kelly, where, it's kind of a little bit of an over redundancy there, even though he's on the back end and not the front end.
But, and kind of back to it, Middleton's got some size and he's got some snarl. Mm-hmm. So if, that's where I would really like to see some time as far as the pairings. I think Dan Kelly taking a back seat as this team matures and develops, and having a really capable, steady defender as your number seven on the AHL that could step in and knows his job, that's not bad either.
Just in the chat, there's a couple of things. Tyler Gong said that if Vegas was paying attention, he thinks that they should look at Melker Carlson. And then Jessica kind of responded with, is Carlson worth protecting? I know we're kind of drifting away from the AHL here, but
yeah,
I just thought it.
I think Carlson's protection status completely depends on which avenue the Sharks take. If they go 7-3-1, I think he's in there. If they go 4-4-1, there's no way in hell he is.
No, I agree. I think they go 7-3-1. I still think they go 7-3-1 if they're smart, but that's just me. Depending on, and of course this depends on, do you give Joe Thornton another contract before this all goes down? Which I don't think they're going to do at this point.
No, that would have been done. I think we can all rest assured that Joe Thornton's handshake deal is completed. His paperwork with the NHL, not so much.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't want to get too far into Sharks lottery protection.
What are we going to talk about all summer? We can't spoil everything.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like we're going to need to, that's a good question. So Cheryl's asking, is WA up next year? And what will he be like given the injury? Jeremy WA is a player that I like a lot. I love, that was like my favorite. I think it was my favorite pick of that draft. As much as I like Timo, I was really sour at the time that Barzal fell to like a bajillion. So I really like that. I really like the WA pick. Like, that was my favorite pick of the draft. Man, I'm concerned.
So Cheryl's reading my mind, because I've been, once I unbury myself, because I'm still working through, I've got about seven different articles in various states of disrepair. I was not a fan of the Jeremy WA pick. I was very bullish on Sebastian Aho, AJ Greer, and Brandon Carlo. Those were guys that I was really, really excited for. So the thing with WA is he's got hurt so much. You really have to wonder, physically I bash on the Q constantly, and I know this. I'm working on it, but
it's hard not to.
If you can't survive physically in the Q, I mean, what would have happened to him out in the dub?
Oof. Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah. I mean, that's just terrifying. And not just that, is he putting himself in a position to be hurt? And I know that sounds crazy, but taking a hit is an art, you know, and players learn that, and being smart, knowing that you can't make 10 hits every night for 82 games.
Right.
You just physically can't. You won't make it. So if that's something that's lacking, I don't know. You know, I think he's got a really good skill set, and I got to watch him real closely this summer. He was at the dev camp. He was at rookie camp. Then I saw him out at the National Junior Evaluation Camp once Team Canada rolled through. I thought he was really good for Team Canada, actually.
Right.
Probably would have made that team had he not got hurt. I just have big concerns. But the Barracuda, if you look at who's coming in next year, who has the potential to come in next year, you know, there's quite a bit going on there. Joachim Blichfeld, you know, he was drafted out of Europe, so technically he's AHL eligible. You look at Jeremy Waugh, Kevin Fitzgerald is out there. Gage Rask.
There's another guy that I think goes under the radar, like, that I really, really like.
Yep, exactly. You know, he's a player that I thought he was one of the best players at rookie camp. I'm really excited to see him, actually, as far as the defensemen go. excuse me. Rudolf Baukers, you know, he's a player that's going to be turning pro. He put up his 32nd goal of the year for the Blazers. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a trigger man. You know, he for people that are still not big fans of Goldobin, just wait for Baukers to come on through, because he shoots, he scores, and that's about it, folks.
He hovers on the perimeter. He doesn't get his hands dirty at all.
No. I don't know if they have to wash his jersey at the end of games. Maybe every, like, third game, just because, you know, the Gatorade or what have you might. But, you know, Baukers, you know, but the flip side of that is his shot is lethal.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
He's got a shot. That's for sure. Yeah. You know,
you're going to do one thing, make it scoring goals.
Yeah, that'll help. I think for Waugh, in my opinion, here's what I think for Waugh. I think he's going to kind of have to follow kind of the same path that Bergman did, where he'll come up to the A next year because he has no choice. He's going to get used sparingly. They're going to throw him in a few games here and there. He's probably going to be terrible. And then he will get, you know, but he'll be working hard in practice. And then the year after, you might see him start to break in as a more regular defenseman for the Barracuda. But I wouldn't expect him to just come up and, you know, I mean, he's got some tools for sure. The reason I was so high on the pick, there's a lot of talent there. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of things to like about Jeremy. Well, I mean, when you look at some of the other players that, you know, they could have took, but I thought at the time, like, I've been really sour on the Sharks defense pool at that point. So to see them try and rectify that with a player like Jeremy, I really like that. And, you know, and I'm a guy who, for what it's worth, really struggles between, well, you need this, but this is the best player on the board. What do you do? Whereas right. A lot of people are like, best player on the board, dummy. But me, I have to overthink everything. So this is, you know, and that's what happens sometimes. that's what I do to myself. I do silly things like that. So I like to overly complicate simple things.
Kevin Lacey also mentions Manny Werder, who also will be turning pro. He was drafted
seventh.
Fifth round.
I thought he was a seventh rounder.
No, that was Blichfeld.
Oh, that was Blichfeld. You're right. Okay.
Yeah. But he was drafted as an overager from Moncton with the Wildcats, but he'll be 20. He's 20 this season. So yeah, he's another player that the Sharks will have a roster decision to figure out. And then Cheryl said if they watch World Juniors, Balcus was on full display. I don't know if that's for our case or against our case, because I did watch. I watched just about every minute of World Juniors, and I thought, you know, Balcus on Team Latvia, it reminded me a lot of his Blazers.
He had points. He had points. Yeah. I'll give him that.
Right.
But yeah, you need more than goals.
Definitely.
AJ says he's going to start a Pucknology show that just recaps other Pucknology shows.
That might be the longest show. That might be a 2 hour. That's one where, you know, when you're really stuck in traffic and 101 is shut down, that's when you watch AJ's recap of the recaps.
Of the recaps, yeah. That'd be good. Oh my goodness.
AJ, I look forward to subscribing to that.
Me too. Yeah. I like this plan.
We'll call that one Rad. Recap After Dark.
Recap After Dark. Rad, bad, pad. It's all good.
There we go. Okay.
I didn't ask Kevin. You're right. I don't know if Kevin watched the game. I don't know. Kevin could buzz me, and I would have let him on if he wanted to. He knows that, I hope.
Let's see. Rob was saying a lot of interesting roster spot competitions coming up in spring training. Yeah. I think he's talking baseball.
But we're going to co-opt it and say, yes, hockey spring going to be interesting.
Yeah, hockey baseball. As well. You know, yes. I think it's going to be a very interesting year as the Barracuda are going to retool with some youth. Oh, my gosh.
No. Kevin's mad at me.
Is he?
No. Oh, he said he's not. Kevin, you can come on. Kevin was totally in. Kevin doesn't need to be invited. Kevin should just know. You should just know. Look what this show's become now. Look what you've done, Kevin.
Way to go, turtleneck.
Who isn't at Ian right now? I know. That's what I'm saying. Chris is going to make a show with Boner as the acronym, which I think he should totally do.
Oh, gosh. It's coming apart late here, folks.
All right. We should probably kill this. Barracuda at noon, every rhyme.
Actually, Vince has a good point. The Sharks have 3 7th round picks this year. Ooh, so
there's going to be some players coming out of this draft.
Oh, yeah. So Barracuda in 2020, get ready. We're going to get some.
Love it. All right. We should probably get out of here, though, because I think we've been on for a while. And I'm running out of Barracuda things to talk about. We're just kind of just randomly going on and on and on. If you guys just DM me, if you guys want these, if when we do these, if you want them on the audio streams, I didn't put the last one on the audio stream because I always get nervous that there's too much stuff on the audio stream sometimes. But if you want it there, I can make it happen. A lot of talk in the chat about doing this. Look, if I can, you know, I have to sleep at some point, but me and Zach have no problem doing this as long as we're obviously not fighting, you know, as long as there's not a Sharks game or something else that would obviously make more appropriate use of the channel. I think me and Zach have no problem doing this. I don't want to speak for Zach. I should probably ask him. He's here. Zach, how do you feel about that?
Zach is okay with it.
All right. See, there you go. So yeah, well, when stuff's going on, you know, and what we have a night like this where the Barracuda play in the Sharks don't, I think that we are going to do. I was getting there, Christopher. All right. So look at, there's a whole kinds of cool stuff coming up on Pucknology. Sunday, writer's room. Don't know what we're going to talk about, but it's going to be awesome. We'll make this a regular thing. Well, we'll try to make it a regular thing. We're not going up against After Dark.
Because they're way more betterist than us.
They're way more betterist than us, and I can't do two shows at once sometimes. So, but this is something that if you know, like I said, it's got to work out. I mean, it's got to be a weekend because I can't be up
all night, every night on school nights. We'll try and make this a more regular thing. All right.
Real quick, before you do the plugs.
Yes.
Maybe I'm going to throw Ian under the bus here.
That's fine.
Me and Ian and maybe Kevin. Well, what we'll try to do is we'll go through the schedules and try to come up with something.
Yes.
So that way our bad viewers will know when we're on, where good. We don't conflict. And so we'll try to get that done as soon as me or Ian or maybe Kevin can get to
maybe
it.
Maybe Kevin. Yes. Okay. Writer's room. That's a good point. Writer's room is going to, the idea would be for writer's room this weekend because it's like an early like game for the Sharks, but like early late. Cause it's still what 5:30. So for, I think, yeah, we'll be on a little bit later than we normally would because I don't think that the game would end before 7:00, but, we're just going to kind of do a hybrid thing like we always do when we do this. See, this is, I need to stop. All right. We got cool stuff coming up. We have Writer's Room, which is going to be awesome. We have 2 Pucknology After Dark. Well, a hybrid, and we have Pucknology After Dark tomorrow after the game against the Desert Dogs. We have some cool interviews coming up. AJ sat down with, I believe it was AJ and Eric this time, sat down with John Totora. So stay tuned for that article, for that interview. That should drop next week. There's also like a quick little preview in the channel. If you look in our channel listing, there is a little teaser for that. Chris sat down with the person from the Minnesota Wild. It's 2:30 in the morning. You have to bear with me here. He sat down with a Wild person, blogger, podcaster, or something. See, Chris, this is what happens. That's going to drop soon, so stay tuned for that. And then, yeah, Monday's a holiday. Rock on. Holiday here, too. Yay. Brave the Wild. Thank you, Chris. I apologize. Look, it's late, and when I have to be counted on to do appropriate things, I can't do it. I can tell you how much I don't like I don't like Patrick McNally, but I can't tell you what's going on. Yeah, there's a Barracuda game on Monday, so maybe.
Yeah. Afternoon game, 3 p.m. start, taking on the Texas Stars at home. Good seats now available.
Yes.
Come out and support the team. They deserve it. They're an excellent team in first place with a lot of future Sharks.
Yeah. Absolutely. Obviously, audio stream, subscribe here. Subscribe to our channel, Pucknology Writers Room. It's going to be awesome. It's always awesome. But definitely subscribe to our channel over there. We appreciate everything. You know, you guys just coming on and listening to us talk about the AHL team. Yeah, it's going to be awesome. So thank you for watching, Bad. And good night.